Willkommen beim Wonderful Podcast, Living Yoga off the Mat. Ich bin Wanda Badwal. Ich freue mich, gemeinsam mit dir die faszinierende Welt des Yoga, der Spiritualität und persönlichen Weiterentwicklung zu erforschen, zu hören und zu erfahren, wie wir mehr Liebe, Balance und Erfüllung in unserem täglichen Leben integrieren können. Willkommen bei Wonderful. Schön, dass du hier bist. Hey, you guys, and welcome to the wonderful podcast, Living Yoga Off the Mat. I'm so glad that you're here. So today is my last day in Bali, and this is why I took the opportunity and recorded another English-speaking podcast. And I'm super excited today speaking with Sophie Perrienti and Jean-Christophe Gebler, also known as Jesse. They are relationship and communication coaches and the founder and editors of Yogi Times, an online lifestyle guide for the modern day yogi. They are also pioneers in the movement of setting people's souls on fire, shaking them up in a very loving way in order to reach their highest potential. They are both married as a couple, have a son, and live in Bali, Indonesia. This is also where I met Sophie, and Sophie has been, until today, a very important inspiration in my life. She is, or she was, my coach during the years I lived in Bali. So for 3 years, I was seeing her frequently. She was, in many situations, my rescue anchor when I created some drama in my life, or, yeah, the Bali energy shook me up. And I have learned so much from her about relationships, communication, the importance of values and having them really down, really clear, knowing our values. And yeah, I have studied with her the art and practice of nonviolent communication. So I've learned really to express my needs and speak my truth in a loving and non-accusing, non-judgmental way. Because what I've noticed is that when we say, I want to speak my truth, is that it's not meant that we, you know, just blast onto the other our accusations. It's really how do we speak our truth from a loving and compassionate, in a loving and compassionate way, really from our hearts. And this is what this podcast is about. So we will speak about nonviolent communication, also known as heart-to-heart communication, how we can speak our truth in a loving way and express our needs. And that's, I think, one of the greatest tools we can learn in this life, really, because life is relationships. And I'm so excited to introduce to you and share with you this conversation we had yesterday. It really, really, this knowledge changed my relationships and my life greatly. So here is Sophie Perrienti and Jean-Christophe Gebler. Enjoy. All right, you guys, welcome to this week's podcast. I'm so happy that you're here. Welcome. So let's arrive together in the here and now. So wherever you are, please take a moment, and if you can, go ahead and close your eyes. Take a deep inhale through the nose and a big exhale out through an open mouth. Really make a sound. Let's do this 2 more times. Deep inhale and exhale it out. And 1 more time. And relax your shoulders. Allow your belly to relax. Allow your sit bones to arrive, connecting to the earth. Feel the feet connected to the ground. For a moment, listen to all the noises that you can hear from nature. Right now, we are here in Bali listening to the roosters and the birds. So whatever you can hear where you are, listening for a moment to all the sounds that you can perceive. Thank you. Your breath is easily flowing in and out. And with every exhale, let go of all tension, all expectations. Arrive more and more in the here and now. And then take another deep inhale and exhale. And then blink your eyes open and come back into the room. So welcome again, perhaps a little bit more present and calm. So we are right now sitting here in Bali at a very, very beautiful house, the house of Sophie and Jesse, and they're sitting in front of me right now, and I'm super excited being able to speak to them the next hour or so. So welcome you guys on the podcast. Thank you so much for taking your time.
Yes, of Thank course. You. Thank you.
So please take the mic a little closer. No. Yes. So they have to share actually a mic. So that's the first exercise today as a couple.
Yes. Sharing us a closer.
I like that.
So my first question I like to ask in the podcast, everyone, is what moves you right now?
Beautiful question. What moves us right now at this moment in our life?
Yeah, you can, you know, answer one by one.
I would say for me, this is quite an easy one to answer, because what has moved me my entire life and what continues to move me, it's connection. The sensation of feeling connected to people, to nature, to the world at large, but also to my community. So it was what moved me earlier in as far as I can remember in school. I was excited to go to school to meet my community, my friends. And I look back at my life and it's been kind of a thread of what really moves me in life, connecting to people.
And for me, it's this precise moment, this podcast here, slowing down and being here with you, just this present second, now and now and now and now again and now, and not thinking or analyzing or, yeah, just being here.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, we love it.
Feels really good.
So you are both relationship coaches, coaching and teaching people about how to communicate in a more peaceful and healthy way. So as you said, Sophie, we are constantly connecting. We are always relating from the very moment when we come onto this planet Earth. We're in relationship. But it seems to be quite a challenge for each one of us. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why are relationships so challenging?
We love that.
We can talk for hours on this, on this topic.
How many hours do you have? Yeah. I think that relationships, I look at it as the playground of the soul. So we're from an early age, we're in relationship from the moment we're born, right? Early on, it's a really physical and vibrational relationship to our parent in the early years, and then it becomes more of an intellectual connection and then a heart-to-heart connection. But what I'm really passionate about is to bring people back to their heart-to-heart connection, to that vibrational connection of the early stages of our life, because we have gone too much in our head. So what I'm seeing a lot of people having the sort of connection that they're having is more of a head-to-head connection, an intellectual connection, or an, I would say, egoistic connection, right? To put a word on it. But when we start to interact with people and guide them into a much more fulfilling relationship, it's really through making them reconnect to their heart. And then when they reconnect to their heart, they're starting to understand what has been an obstacle to their relationship, because the level of authenticity that they're experiencing when they hear the heart versus listening to the head is so fascinating to them that all the other obstacles that they've encountered become very clear for them. So that level of clarity for me is really what I'm always aiming to bring people to. We have our own answers, and often we look toward guides or teachers, and which is great because it ignites a sense of deeper desire to look inside, and we need that guidance. But mainly, we actually need to look within. And when we look within, we find very clearly what those obstacles are. And of course, we give a little tips around those as well. But those answers are really inside. So I can give you a few of them, the main obstacles that we've identified, right, Jesse, into being obstacles, is that I'll start with the first one. Mm-hmm. People are losing their sense of gratitude. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the biggest obstacles of a really beautiful connected relationship. If you maintain yourself in a sense of gratitude, meaning you drop all sorts of entitlement in any relationship, being with your father, your mother, your siblings, your friends, your coworker, your business partners, you drop the entitlement and you really look at the relationship from a moment to moment. It's like, what's happening now at that moment in the relationship, and how can I be grateful for what happened, even if it's not a good thing that's happening, right? So that sensation of entitlement has gotten all over us as we grow up, and we lose the connection through the loss of gratitude. That's my main, I would say that's my main observation of the mm-hmm. deepest obstacle to great relationships. Mm-hmm.
And I want to add another big one for me. I think it's the programming, the unconscious programming from the media, from parents,
from society.
Mm-hmm. That's, for me, is the major obstacle to a close relationship and to an open heart. We grow up in a society that is very mind-based, like logic and analytical. You have to perform, you have to study, you have to be good, you have to be perfect. And all these are obstacles, and we don't realize we're in it. And most of the time we don't realize we're in it.
And we went unconscious about what's going on in the heart.
By being so much in the mind, mm-hmm. we lose the connection.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned heart-to-heart connection, and then people, started to unlearn how to actually be in their heart and to feel. So what do you tell people, also the people who are listening, what is for you the quickest way to drop into the heart? Mm.
I think the initial thing to do is to slow down. We're all so busy, so full on all the time. And there's a purpose to that. Being so busy doesn't allow us to feel, doesn't now allow us to be in the heart, right? So I always say when I'm interacting with people, just let's slow down. Let's take your life just like a movie that you're not rewinding, because we don't want to go in the past so much, but just like you're slowing down the scene of your life. And you're just taking a breath through it, and you're observing what's going on at that moment. And then as you're slowing down, this really enables you to start to feel more. We have an amazing guiding system called our emotions, our moods, and we don't use it. Okay, so we use the head, we analyze, we try to comprehend, we try to make sense of, we try to make meaning of. And that kind of gets us quite lost at times, or confused, or even depressed, because we can't figure out the answers of what our questioning is about, right? So when we start to slow down, we start to feel. Mm-hmm. And when we start to feel, we start to be guided to what is actually going on internally. And then we get our answers without really having to work so hard for it. So that's the first advice that I tell people. I say, take a breath and then slow down. Right?
Yes.
And then as soon as they slow down, the answer comes for them. And then I just act, we both act as a guide to this answers coming to them. We just redirect a little bit, you know, to the right, to the left, and just slowly carry them toward their sense of clarity. But the answers are always there. We're just so busy. Mm-hmm. And so much in the head, as Jesse was saying.
Yeah, and I want to add another tool would be to go in your friends or people's shoes, mm-hmm. and forget about you being the center. And so that brings, by putting yourself in your friend's shoe, brings empathy.
Or your partner's shoes.
Or your partner's shoe.
Yes, the compassion, the empathy is the... But it can't really come before you've felt what's going on for you. It's very hard to be compassionate to other people, truly compassionate to other people, or I would say to other people, if you're not such in an emotional relationship with them, that's fine. But to, let's say, in relationship, close relationship, we're too involved emotionally to be in real state of compassion. We kind of have our own interest in what's going on in a relationship, so it's a little bit about us. And
we're not curious enough. That's the thing. Just ask questions, curious questions. What's going on for you? What's happening for you? We're interested into what's happening for ourselves most of the time. Oh, I'm feeling that way. I'm angry. I'm upset. But we rarely ask, oh, how about you? How do you feel? What's going on?
And it's great that we want to know what's going on with ourselves. It's great, but we need to do it in a very clear way, very constructive way. Not just feeling the frustration and the annoyance and the disappointment and the anger, but also feeling what's underneath that. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm talking about earlier. The guiding system is we have an internal guiding system. It's our mood. The way we feel teaches us what's going on underneath. So Jesse and I are passionate about teaching people to really know what's behind the mood and what's behind the feeling, what is the need that is there, and usually what is the belief that holds that need.
What's the program, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on behind all the talk and the emotions? What's happening for me? What's happening for the other person? We analyze, we don't overanalyze, but we're curious of what's happening. How did it get to escalate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. So what I observe in our society is that feelings, emotion, there's a lot of judgment about feelings and emotions, and that we don't allow ourselves to feel the full scope of feelings, especially the so-called negative ones. And one saying I really love right now is feeling is healing. So really feeling in order to heal. But as you said, not only the surface feelings of frustration or anger, but where does it actually come from? Where was the first moment in my life I experienced that?
Mm-hmm.
So you would say these guiding feelings are usually pointing us back to a wound of our childhood, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is the core of our teaching, really, and the core of our guidance to people, is that we construct ourselves within the first few years. I would say, you know, 0 to 3 years old is very, very vibrational construction of our being, because we're not necessarily have the language developed yet to analyze and intellectualize all of that. So everything that's going on around you as a child, you're really having a vibrational imprint. And when I say vibrational, it means emotional imprint into your body on a cellular level. And then it goes unconscious. So as you, you know, and then 3 to 6 years old, there's other parts of the being that constructs itself. And then 0 to 12, you're pretty much built for your life. And depending on what has happened in your childhood, it will have a big impact of your entire life. And I always like to joke that you spend 0 to 12 years kind of getting messed up, and then you spend your entire life trying to undo that.
I know. Why is that?
Well, I think there's a spiritual purpose to that. Mm. Is that we need to come here and experience duality. And we need to experience emotions. And if we look at our being as human, well, yes, we're made of bones and nutrients, and we're human beings, but we're also energy. So, I mean, it's a word that everybody understands these days, you know. We're made of energy, and a part of us is energetic, and a part of us is more matter. And it's really the duality between the two. And for us to experience the lightness and the amazing, beautiful, powerful energy that we are, we also have to experience the opposite, the heaviness of our being at times, right? Mm-hmm. So just as there is the white and black and the yin and the yang, and I think that's really what we are here for, feeling that those emotions of disappointment and sadness and abandonment and resentment and all those emotions enable us to recognize that that's not what we are, but we are the opposite of that. We're pure energy and pure love. But how would we know we are that if we're not experiencing its opposite, its contradiction? Mm-hmm. So that's my spiritual take on it. And a lot of time people will tell me, well, why do we have to like go through that? And why can we understand this earlier? So, and I think this is a real personal journey for everybody. There is people that I've met in my life that very early in their life understood that. And they right away became quite empowered at a young age. And I've met people later in life, in their 60s, 70s, that were still just more trapped into that other side of the duality, the heaviness of all those emotions. So it's not an age thing. Mm-hmm. It's more of a consciousness thing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And the new generation coming up, you know, these days is just so fascinating for me, because they're talking a language that we took years to integrate. Mm-hmm. Already the generation of our parents in the 60s, 70s, they became so much more free to speak this language. And then we grew up with a language that was already more loud, you know, talking about psychology, and we were not using energy, that word, when we mm-hmm. were young. But then the children that are coming right now, the word energy doesn't scare them. It's integrated. They speak it mm-hmm. as a normal currency.
Yes, it's true.
So we're seeing that, to add to the sense of purpose of what I was talking, is that this evolution is just not an interpersonal, or I would say a personal evolution. We're all participating to the interpersonal evolution of this entire planet. Mm-hmm. So as a collective consciousness, we're all doing our part in evolving. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're coming here to do.
Yes.
That's the playground.
It's a playground. Yeah,
I don't think we know how powerful we are, most of us. It could take some time, or it could be instant. But most of the time, we don't realize we're super powerful. We're mm-hmm. superhumans. And we can see it when we become present. We practice presence. That's my take.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's we're more afraid of our light than we're of our darkness. We're so familiar with our darkness, and mm-hmm. we kind of rejoice in it a little bit. Of course, intellectually, we don't want it, but emotionally, vibrationally, we're quite addicted to it. Mm-hmm. Who could we be if we were letting go of all the complaint and all the sadness and all the disappointments and all the resentment? Mm-hmm. That's always the question we like to ask. Mm-hmm. And we ask ourselves that question every day, because even though we teach that and we are kind of, you know, we live in the bath of consciousness all day long because we're interacting with people and guiding them. Nevertheless, we're still human beings. So mm-hmm. at times, our own program takes over, and we have to constantly stay vigilant and courageous that we are walking toward our own light mm-hmm. and not letting what life's obstacles or hurdles bring to us as an excuse to get back into getting comfortable in the familiar darkness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm thinking about a moment yesterday where I was in my program, my dark program, and I'm so thankful for Sophie to point it out in a loving way. And that's the beauty of a relationship when we both agree to help each other, carry each other, and lift ourselves up. It's so important. I'm so glad and so thankful, so grateful to be working together with Sophie, because when I'm out in my dark side, I cannot get out. It mm-hmm. takes me a little while. It takes me something to get me out. And we have codes, and I know she's mm-hmm. got the best intention. Mm-hmm. I'm taking in, I'm breathing, and I'm observing while I'm in my program. Mm-hmm. And we let it pass, and then we analyze where it came from, and then it's all over. It's a great lesson. We passed it, and usually it doesn't last too long because we've been practicing. So that's what I want to add is with the practice, the drama is disappearing, mm-hmm. and you don't dwell in it. We have 3 seconds to 1 hour interactions or arguments or being in the dark, and that's it. And it happens less and less and less mm-hmm. with practice and with the years. That's the outcome of practicing and being present and seeing our program, just being the witness of our program. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. what I love, is staying as little as possible or getting out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we could precise a little bit for those of you listening to us right now. What Jesse mentioned about the program is also what we could call our identity. Some people also like to call it the ego. There's a little bit of a negative connotation around the word ego. So we try to stay away from that word because it's not, we don't look at it in the maybe the more mainstream way of using, you know, they have a big ego or she, not in that term. It's more about looking at the identity or the program as a conglomeration and an amalgam of emotional patterns that we are trapped into. That's what we call our program. Just to,
yeah, yes. The part that doesn't serve us, that we don't really need. It's helping to show you the way, but the thing is actually the things you want to work on and mm-hmm. let go.
Yes. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for sharing also your, this moment you had yesterday. So you mentioned you're practicing a lot, you know, now for years you work together. So already your level of consciousness is pretty high when it comes to communicating, which words you're using, in which tone of voice you're communicating and all of that, you know. And I've learned so much from you about communication, and you both teach nonviolent communication. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is that we, and I say like most people, are not even aware of how often we are violent in the way of accusation and using judgments. It's already a way of being violent. So can you give us a little introduction about nonviolent communication, how most people being violent without even noticing in their communication?
Yes, absolutely. We got introduced to nonviolent communication at a very early stages of our relationship.
Which so lucky. Is
oh, I think it's the greatest blessing of our lives, really, individually, you know, regardless of, for me, it was just an amazing gift to understand early in this relationship, because we've had both other relationships before we met, and they were not necessarily as conscious, I would say. Mm. So this introduction, excuse me, this introduction to nonviolent communication was profound for us. It is a technique. It's a technique of communication that has been developed by Marshall Rosenberg, who was a psychologist, American psychologist. And he passed away a few years ago. And I'm so grateful for him to have introduced the world to this because, from just a technique, it's actually became an entire way of life for us. So mainly it's such a simple technique that, you know, it's those kind of simple thing in life that are sometimes difficult to transmit because, we have a way to look at life that it should be complicated and it would take a long time to make a change. That is a technique that make an immediate change. And mainly it's about learning to observe what is going on in your life without adding judgment, evaluation, or labeling to it. And this is not how our society functions. This is not how we've all been brainwashed to communicate. We communicate in a way where we immediately, it's a strong word, but I like to use this word. We're kind of vomiting our emotions on other people. And the purpose of that is that while we kind of throw all this at other people and blame and shame and point the finger at somebody else, we really don't have to take a look at ourselves. So it's a learned pattern. It's not a natural way of communicating, but it's an habitual way of communicating the way our society functions. So we've learned it from our parents. We've learned it from movies, from books, from the media, from the news. And then we've just started to speak like that. And what I mean by like that is that we think we're speaking in a very clear and constructive way, but we're actually adding a lot of words in the semantic, the structure of our language that are feeling like an attack to the other person.
Can you give us a very practical example?
Sure.
About me. Say something about me.
About you?
Yeah.
What would I say? I only have wonderful things to say about
or about Jesse.
it's very simple. You could say a sentence such as, he didn't even call me to tell me he was going to be late.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can hear when I say this sentence, he did not even call me. You can hear the drama. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you guess what word brings the drama for a second, right? I'll say that sentence again. He did not even call me to tell me he was going to be late. Well, you know, it's an easy guess. It's the word even. Mm-hmm. He did not even call me. You can sense the sense of drama, the sense of reproach and attack that this single little word puts into that sentence. So if you're the receiver of that sentence, you're immediately feeling either guilty or attacked or even a little bit resentful that you're being told that. So what are you going to do? You're going to attack back or you're going to justify yourself. And immediately you're losing the connection with the person. You're losing the ability to understand that that person maybe was worried or that person was a little bit disappointed. And then each person will, as I said at the beginning, will talk head to head and try to prove the point of who's right and who's wrong. Is the person that did not call right or wrong? Is the person that makes the reproach right or wrong? And then you've lost the conversation. So in the technique of nonviolent communication, you would only say, you did not call me to let me know you would be late. Okay? Or you did not call me to let me know that you were not going to be here at 5 p.m. as we had agreed. Would be even more clean because mm-hmm. late, it has a little bit of a negative mm-hmm. connotation. So it's really about being vigilant of the intention that you put behind your sentences. And of course, at first, you can't catch all those thoughts and all those words. And, you know, it would be like me telling you, I'm going to teach you a few words of Chinese today. And then mm-hmm. we're all going to communicate in Chinese starting tomorrow.
Yes. Okay. Can you give us the little structure of the nonviolent communication?
Sure. So I'll give you the technique because it's so simple. And you can, you know, hopefully after this, listening to this podcast, you'll be able to use it immediately.
Yeah, all of you.
Yes, all of you do it immediately. So The first step is really observing. We do not observe, we perceive. The difference between observing and perceive is that in perceiving, you're putting all your personal interpretation, evaluation, and judgment into what is actually going on. Okay? And even a label. So the person is mean for not calling back on time, or this person is inconsiderate or rude. You've already put a label on that person. If you're backtracking a little bit and you're only observing, you're removing judgment, evaluation, and labeling. So you're only speaking about the factual situation. What happened is the question that matches the observation. What happened? You did not call me to let me know that you would be coming later than 5 p.m. as we had agreed. Can you hear how factual that is? There's no judgment, there's no evaluation, there's no labeling. Okay, so that's the first step. The second step is, regardless of you observing it, there's still a sensation, a feeling that you're experiencing. So the idea is that you identify the feeling and then you're expressing it. So once you've made the observation, step one, step two is, what am I feeling? What is the sensation in my body? What am I experiencing here? Okay, as a sensation. So in this case, it could be, when I observe that you did not call me to let me know that you would be coming later than the time we agreed, I felt disappointed. Mm-hmm. It's just a sensation, a feeling, and it's only one word.
For many people, this is why I'm asking, like, for many people, it's hard to actually know what they're feeling. So how many feelings are there actually? I think there are not so many, right? Like actual feelings.
Well, there is kind of leader feelings, mm-hmm. right? That keeps coming back. And then there's nuances. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not frustrated. Maybe it's annoyed. It's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not resentful, but it's more disappointed. So there's not, in the end, we have a whole list of feelings that, mm-hmm. that we usually give to people to get more familiar with their own feelings. But it's usually the same one that are coming back over and over. And the reason is because, which leads me to the third step, it's because we have needs that are either met or unmet in any given situation. So if you're looking at that particular situation, when I'm observing that you did not call, you know, everything we explained, I felt disappointed because I had a need for, let's say, punctuality, mm-hmm. right? So if your need for punctuality is not met in that moment, then there is a sensation that will be the indicator of that need not being met. Mm-hmm. And what we've observed over the years is that it's very, very recurrent of the same needs for people. So if it's a need for punctuality, a need for appreciation, a need for validation, a need for being heard, a need for connection, then most likely those needs are going to show up again and again. So once you've identified them, that's what's beautiful about this technique, is once you've really understood what is it that you truly need and what is it that you're feeling associated with that need as an indicator that the need is met or not met, then you can access them super fast. So, of course, at first, the technique feels very theatrical and very phony because no one communicates like that. So I always have worried a little bit from people getting coached by us, that they say, but how am I going to go home and talk like this to my partner or to my parents? And we say, you just go baby steps.
And the first baby step is to apply the technique to you. Mm-hmm. So you do the same process, but instead of practicing in front of your friend or your parent or sibling, you do the technique, you apply it to yourself. So you go, okay, so when this person does not come on time or does not call, how do I feel? You don't need the person in front of you. How do I feel? And then you go into the need. Oh, it's because my need for recognition is not met. You don't have to have the person in front of you. So you practice first.
It's actually essential that you're practicing first. Mainly this technique of communication is so that you start to learn to have a beautiful communication with yourself, and you respect yourself and you put boundaries to the kind of thoughts that you allow your mind to generate. If you let every single thought that you're having take over your energy and your space in the mind, there's a lot of those thoughts that are not serving you. So this technique is really forcing you to stay clean with your own communication to yourself.
Yeah, and you'll have an aha moment. Oh, this is why I'm being triggered. Oof, already you step down and you feel already better because you understand why you got triggered. You don't put it on the other person facing you.
And I think only then you can start to do the technique on another person. It's very difficult to start to question and be curious to what's going on for somebody else if you haven't yet yourself understood why you're feeling frustrated or annoyed or even angry in the communication at that stage. So trying to be compassionate towards somebody else when you're not yet compassionate toward yourself is not going to be very constructive.
Yes, and not clear, right?
Mm-hmm. So not clear.
Mm-hmm. I think many people also, and I know it from myself, you know, I can see how much my relationships, my communication has changed over the years I've been working with you. And what I found out that I can immediately now know what need is behind there and not go into the reactivity of it and just stay with that sensation. I think what I also love is that you call it heart-to-heart communication because it takes a level of vulnerability and courage to actually voice your need and your feeling. And I think that's why our society speaks in this superficial way, because it's way more safe.
Yes, yes. Actually, you're touching a very important point of the core of our teaching as well, which is to bring people to a vulnerable place. Mm-hmm. We're not being vulnerable is not seen as a strength in our society. Especially if you're a man, I think a little boy is being taught still to tough it up. And we coach a lot of men and we see them come to a place of just feeling the feelings. They haven't felt the feelings in years. They don't even know what it feels like to feel. And sometimes we have to guide them quite strongly to, you know, they can't do it on their own. They don't know what it is to feel. They go in the head right away. They analyze. They tell us a whole story around it. But we make them drop the story and then just feel. And then usually, immediately, the tears are coming. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful way to empower people, not just the men, but the women have sometimes a greater ability to feel. Mm-hmm. And at times, there is women that are not feeling so good about what they always tell me, you know, I'm too emotional. and I said, there's not such a thing as being too emotional. Maybe there's such a thing as acting and reacting too strongly to your emotions, but not being too emotional. We are beings of emotion. That's what we are mainly. So we cannot be too much of that. That's what we're made of.
So true.
Yes.
I love that.
So vulnerability is the greatest strength of who we are these days in this world. We have to be vulnerable in order to listen to our guidance.
Yeah, and it comes with speaking your truth. So when you start speaking your truth and be courageous, applying the technique, it translates and it opens the heart, your heart and the heart of the other person. That's when the heart-to-heart communication happens. When you get the courage to get the words out that were hidden within you and that were not coming out.
And sometimes for years and years, you know, we coach a lot of couples and it's always fascinating to see people that have been together for 20 years, 30 years, and there's so much they don't know about each other. There's so much they're not sharing with each other on a deeper, intimate level. Mm-hmm. And this is the beauty of this technique, is that what it offers, and I think this is a very important point to remember, what that technique offers is an extreme environment of emotional safety. what people are able to say to each other in the safety of the technique. That means they only stay in the observation, they only talk about their feeling, and they're only talking about the need, brings them to such a place of authenticity that they surprise themselves of what they're capable mm-hmm. of telling their partner mm-hmm. that they thought they could never say it.
Yes. And one reason is that a feeling is a truth for someone. You cannot question the way the person is mm. feeling. Yes. No one will tell you, that's not true. You don't feel that way when you tell them how you feel. So then you can feel safe to express it. This is the way I'm feeling. It's not questionable.
Yes, this is the most amazing thing that happened when you're using the technique is that you can't actually tell somebody, you know, oh, that wasn't true or it didn't exactly happen like that. Well, it's not that I came late. I came just 10 minutes and that's not late. You can debate where within the sharing of your feeling, there's no debating. If you say I'm feeling sad, no one can tell you, you know, you're not, because yes, you are. Mm-hmm. So it removes all possibility for the outsider of your own intrinsic feeling is that no one can question it. Mm-hmm. And that to me is super powerful, because then you can speak your truth. You can say anything to anyone and you own it.
Mm-hmm. And it's safe.
And it's safe, yes.
So let's go back to that example of, you know, one person coming late, the other one feels disappointed. So again, for the people listening, to make this really clear, so you observe a situation, you stay factual about it, say what happens without any judgment, say your feeling and the need behind it. So disappointment, the need for punctuality, for example, right? And then what? What is the other person? What's the role of the other one?
That's the tricky part, because a lot of people will tell me, well, what happened if I'm using the technique mm-hmm. and then my partner right. hasn't been trained in this? And I say it doesn't matter, because what the technique brings you, or this way of communicating brings you, it brings you the ability to transform what comes back at you in a way that you want to hear what you want to hear, which is you want to only hear what's factual about what comes back from the person. So, of course, when you're communicating that way, the person that you're talking to can utilize anything that you're going to say and turn it to their advantage, or even question the way you're communicating suddenly and say, well, why are you talking weird? You know, I hear that a lot, where when people start talking in that way and their partner is not trained in that, they don't understand how they're talking. But if you're using the technique and staying in the moment, everything that comes at you is being observed for what it is. So whatever your partner is answering, whatever the person in front of you is answering, you're observing that and you're saying, oh, well, what I'm hearing you say that, this is how I feel. And now my need for being heard is not met, because I just mentioned to you that I felt disappointed and you're talking about something else. Mm-hmm. So I want to reframe our conversation, and I want to let you know again that I felt disappointed because I had a need for punctuality, but this is not about you. This is about me. And you didn't do anything wrong. It's just that I got disappointed. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, this is just the first layer of what's happening. But it opens up so much layers of what we can talk about. So, for example, in this case, we could say, and I'm not sure why I feel disappointed when my need for punctuality is not met. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because I have a need for excellence and I always want to be on time. And again, this has nothing to do with you. But I did get disappointed when you came late.
And then you can add the curiosity and then, oh, what's happening to you when I said this? How did mm-hmm. you feel? Because then they may be triggered and then mm-hmm. they may stay in the head and then attack back because they're still in the head. Right. Oh, what's happening to you that you replied that way or you used this word? What's this word about that you used? Then it's not about you, only you. Then you become curious. Then that's when back and forth dance goes, but a healthy one where you bring the curiosity. It's not all about you.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, it would look like when I'm observing that you say that I was being aggressive, I felt misunderstood, because all I was expressing is that I felt disappointed and that I had a need for punctuality. So when you started to call me aggressive, I didn't feel heard and I didn't feel understood, because I have a real need to be connected with you right now and feeling like I can be heard. Right? So do you see the layers of how we're going? Of course, this is not the type of conversation that's going to happen on your first day learning this technique, right?
No, it really sounds like it takes a lot of work, a lot of practice, right? And as you said, it's not the way we used to communicate.
Yeah, no. Always tell people to take it slow, mm-hmm. don't rush into it, feel, do it slow.
Yes, and like anything you do in life, you don't become good at this overnight, you know? It's like yoga, you gotta do the poses you have, you know? You can't just start to see your body opening and your hips opening without actually practicing. So some people are flexible, you know, mm-hmm. right away, or some people have the strength in the poses. And it's the same way. Some people have this just amazing natural way of communicating in a loving and caring way, where they never feel to take things mm-hmm. personally, or they're never attacking people back. But that's very unusual, right?
Yes, yes. So the example you just gave, you know, mostly the conversation doesn't look like that. So people are emotional, mm-hmm. right? And reactive. Mm-hmm. So what do you tell people in the urgent moment of reactivity and emotionality?
I will say less is more. Always.
Not talk in that moment, right?
Yes, less is more. I would say this is a trait of women. Of course, some men do it, but it's a really, I want to talk to the women out there, because I'm one of them. I'm one of yours, okay? We want to get to the nuts and bolts of something. We're going to go for the kill. We're going to go for the conversation until, you know, 3 a.m, until we've gotten somewhere and we really feel heard and we really feel understood. And we want to know that our partner has, you know, understood how we feel. And that will get us into an emotional mess at times. Sometimes it's not the time to dig. It's not the time to go deeper in the conversation. And at the cost of creating an argument or an emotional reaction, or to create a big mess in the connection that we have with the person, to really put in jeopardy the quality of exchange with somebody, I think sometimes it's not the time to go there. We need to learn to slow down again and to simply recognize that if we're not feeling heard and we're not feeling understood, there's no point in carrying on the conversation. And there's no point in screaming and speaking louder in order to be heard, because most likely the person has heard you. They're just not able to hear you in the way that you want to feel heard at that moment, right? So I always say, if you're not feeling that you're staying in your power, you're not staying in your grounded and clear and loving and caring, then either remove yourself from the communication, but you announce it. Never storm out of a room and bang a door and cut yourself off, because that's pretty violent, right? But just tell the person, listen, what I'm observing right now is that I'm no longer capable of staying in my loving energy with you when I'm speaking with you. And I want to end this conversation at this moment so that I can maintain myself in that loving energy. And then I want to be able to speak with you or listen to you. You know, that's setting boundaries, pretty much.
You can say, let's both look into what's triggering ourselves on our own separately, and let's get back together when we figure it out.
Yes, that's when you're in a semi-conscious relationship already. But if you're, you know, talking to not just in relationship with the people that you're living with, but also, you know, your coworker and your business partner and your, you know, your employers, and sometimes it's more important to maintain the quality of exchange than trying to get your irrational need for something met in that moment. But it can be a double sword, right? Because I have seen a lot of people also not saying anything because they don't want to create conflict. So that's not setting your boundaries. That's actually sacrificing your truth in order to create peace. And it's working. It's kind of an emergency technique to create peace, but long term it's going to create amount of resentment.
Okay. Right.
And then when you see there's a charge in a conversation, that's the red flag to tell you, oh, there's a story and there's ego involved and there's no flow. It's not going anywhere. So let's stop and let's look within again. Mm-hmm. So the red flag is the tone of voice, which tells you there's a story, there's a need that is not met. Let's stop for that person. So let's stop and analyze what's going on deeply. So not necessarily analyze with your mind, but feel it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And go through the process of the NVC. You go, oh, when this happened, I observed this and that's how I felt. And then you do it on, yeah, separately.
Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a very important tip is that anytime somebody is attacking you, it's because they are hurt. It's very basic, very simple. So if you're able to maintain yourself in a state of consciousness where you're remembering this very simple tip, anytime somebody points the finger at you, anytime somebody gives you a reproach or judges you or put a label on you or evaluate what you did right or wrong, that's because they're being hurt about something. Not necessarily that you're the cause of their hurt, but you're definitely a trigger.
And if you're not able to look at someone's eyes or give them a hug at any moment, it means that you're in the program, you're in the identity, you're in the ego. So that's when the work starts.
Mm. Thank you so much, you guys. I feel we could talk on for hours. I think we have to do a second podcast of this. So we slowly coming to an end. So my final question would be, so from your experiences working with so many couples in relationships in different kinds, what are your three tips? And each one of you can have three. For relationships to make them work more peacefully?
Yeah, I can start. A big one for me is knowing my value and living for that value, which is peace, a peaceful and harmonious relationship. So I've put it on top a little bit naturally, and I've integrated it. And so I know it's important. I feel it's important. It's just there all the time. I don't even have to think about it. So when there's any sort of small conflict with a friend, with our son or with Sophie, I it's there. So I know it's a feeling. It's already integrated. So I don't go anywhere, but look for that harmony. Find every way possible to stay harmonious in the moment. So that's the main one.
To set your value. Yeah, the I guess that tip is set for yourself what is one most important value in your life, and then find any way possible to validate that value at any given moment in your life.
Mm-hmm. The second is when I feel resistance. Like I said earlier, looking at my partner, my son, when I feel that resistance, I know it's the ego. The resistance is the identity. And when I feel I cannot do it, I cannot approach, hug, or look, I know I'm in the program. Therefore, the red flag is there. And then I want to go towards love, and I choose love. Therefore, I go towards the person in front of me. So that's another tip that I love and I practice, and it's really working well.
Sophie, you have another one?
Well, I have definitely the same tip as Jesse in terms of being clear with your values in life. So peace and harmony early on in the relationship, we discussed our value. And for me, it was as clear as Jesse's. Like, I'm not going and entering in a relationship if we don't share that value for peace. It's more important, right? Slowing down is my big thing. Sometimes we have an agenda. We run a, you know, a big company. We are on all the time. And because we have that value for peace, when something happens, we are priority. That means everything drops. And of course, if there is big responsibilities, we will, you know, follow through in that moment. But very, very shortly after that, the tip is address what is going on within an hour, if you can, within a few minutes, and actually never, never overnight. Never something has to go past 24 hours. So that the next morning you can wake up feeling like this is a new relationship every single day. After 19 years in relationship, my greatest accomplishment, I think, in terms of relationship for my personal life, is that I wake up next to Jesse in the morning and there was no sensation of resentment or sadness or unspoken words or really, really, it's clear, it's clean. So yes, after 19 years, it feels like I just meet him every morning. Mm. It's beautiful, you know? I'll give another tip that for me is personally very important. I teach it also in my coaching, but it's dear to me. I will call this the microscopic truth, which goes along with the tip that I just said about keeping everything really clear. In a relationship, yes, we all have our little secret garden and things that we like and that we don't necessarily share or whatever. But what I call the microscopic truth is that you're able to speak with the people you love the deepest, intimate things that you're experiencing in your life and in your heart, and that you don't hold back. You don't hold back. You say things. And because often you get surprised of how well received that is and how it brings you to much deeper level of intimacy. Right? So I think after so many years of spending time with people, I can say with great confidence that what people are after is intimacy. And speaking your truth in a very microscopic way, even if you're afraid that you're going to hurt the other person, because it's your truth and because you're feeling it, you speak it. And you're not responsible for the way that the person is going to choose to analyze that or take it to attack you back or whatever. Just speak your truth. Be you.
Right.
And a final tip for me is that we're in a partnership, we're in a relationship, and we're in each other's lives for the best. And then we have an agreement that I'm not going to let her stay in her dark side. And she has,
we're not going to get away with anything.
She's not going to get away with her lower self. And I'm going to shine light or help her see it. And she knows that with my best intention. And she knows it's going to be coming from love. In order for us to grow, for her and for myself and for the couple, the relationship to grow and stay healthy and clear.
Yes, and we're not taking this as a responsibility, by the way. This is not a responsibility. This is an excitement. This is a joy to share and bring light on each other's. It's not, it doesn't feel like work, mm-hmm. you know, at all. It feels like playground. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're curious to take it to the next level mm-hmm. all the time.
Yes, and if I can just, you know, wrap up with one important message to those of you who are listening, is that why would you want to be in any relationship if it's not to make it extraordinary, right?
Yes, anyone.
Even the one that you think you're stuck with, like your parents or your siblings, you know, they're there in your life for a reason. And if you can look at them and do everything that it's in your power to make them extraordinary, even if you don't get nothing back from it, just you from your perspective, make it something beautiful and playful and extraordinary.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So you're located in Bali, Indonesia. So for anyone who's coming to Bali and wants to meet you guys, have a couple session, please guys, go. It's so worth it. It's going to change your relationship, your life. So you can also book a single session with you, right, Sophie? Mm-hmm. So where can people find you on your website?
Yes, they can find us on sophieparienti.com. And keep stay posted on the workshops that we're hosting. We also have an online, we were so excited that we have now some of our teaching on as an online course. We teach the nonviolent communication, so you can find that and access that. You can also always reach us personally, and if you're coming to Bali, please contact us, and if it's for a session or if it's just for a cup of tea. You know, yes. Let's connect.
And we love spending time in Europe in the summer. So usually July, August, we're in Europe.
Yes, exactly. If you happen to listen to this from Europe, we're usually in France or in Greece or yes. somewhere in Europe. And you can reach out. And if we can meet, we can always connect on Skype. And yes. we do all our sessions on Skype as well. Skype, Zoom, whatever.
Right.
So, yes.
Exactly. So I will put the website in the show notes. Also for the ones who are interested in your yogi guide, mm-hmm. yeah. So you have a Yogi Times. It's a guide for the modern day yogi, a lifestyle guide. Can yes. you say a few words around that too?
Yes, Yogi Times is our first child, I would say. We launched Yogi Times 19 years ago when as soon as we met. So I always like to say we got pregnant as soon as we met, and this is now a long partnership in terms of business together. We are present in 13 different cities as a lifestyle city guide, but we also have tons of articles and content about everything wellness and yoga and self-development, which is obviously our passion. So it's a community. We have about 500,000 people now in this community, and we encourage everyone to go to our website and read and get inspired and find information to walk on your path of consciousness and get to your highest potential. This yes. is why we're doing Yogi Times, to bring people to their highest potential.
Amazing, you guys. Thank you so much for your work. Yeah, for being and bringing your light into this world through your work and what you do. You're amazing. So thank you. I will put all the notes in the show notes where you can get in touch with Sophie and Jesse. And as Sophie said, you can also take part in one of the workshops, book an online session, or they're coming to Europe. So stay in touch, get on the newsletter. And thank you so much for listening. I really hope you gain a lot of inspiration today for your relationships. And perhaps you also would like to buy a book about nonviolent communication. And also on Sophie's website, I saw there are very amazing book recommendations you can read into. The Four Agreements.
Four Agreements. There's right. many books there that are very geared toward relationship. And stay tuned, because there's a book in the making from our end, so
yes, please.
We'll let people know about it. And I just want to say one word about you, Wanda. I've seen you grow so tremendously in the last few years, and I'm really impressed by what you're doing and really amazed by those podcasts that you're putting out there. This is such a beautiful way to serve your community. Mm-hmm. So yes, well done.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. Yes, I'm here to serve. And, you know, I want to invite people to share what helped me on my path, you know, and the people that touched my life and helped me to grow into who I am today. So, yeah, this is why I'm doing this. So, you guys, I really hope you enjoyed this hour with us. Thank you so much, you two, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Lots of love, you guys, and see you next week. Namaste.
Vielen Dank fürs Einschalten und Zuhören. Wenn dir diese Folge gefallen hat, freue ich mich, wenn du auch nächste Woche wieder mit dabei bist. Finde alle Infos zum Podcast unter www.wandabadwal.com, Spotify, Apple Podcast oder deiner Lieblings-Podcast-Plattform. Ich freue mich, wenn du mir folgst, den Podcast mit deinen Freunden teilst und eine positive Bewertung dalässt. Denn nur mit deiner Unterstützung kann der Podcast wachsen und so viele Menschen wie möglich inspirieren. Danke, dass du dabei warst. Ich wünsche dir eine wundervolle Zeit und wir hören uns nächste Woche. Namaste.